And Gentlemen's World's back with another episode here on a Wednesday, March 9th. I figured it's time to switch gears a little bit because I haven't talked about a certain topic in a while. The reason I haven't talked about the topic in so long of a time is because I was trying to give the benefit of the doubt. But as I've watched it, I realize it's a problem, and I wanted to bring it to surface. And for those listening from around the world, the of course, our site, casualtalkradio.net, our new site, has our historical podcast entries. And if you've listened to me for any sustained period, you know that one of the core topics I like to talk about is workplace employee treatment, how people are handled and managed by different companies, worker rights, worker freedoms, freedom in general. And so if you're not in the United States, some of what I have discussed may be somewhat foreign, no pun intended, and might even be concerning, but it's really how it is out here in the United States. And if you're in the United States, you know that's how it is. And I want to tell that story. First, before I do that, just a couple of updates, just to refresh on where we're at for the show, for the podcast. Podcast is still very successful on anchor.fm. And just so that you are in the loop, there'll be a couple of minor changes that should not directly affect you, I don't think. But it's going to change somewhat slightly the length of the episode a little bit, as I will be adding a little bit more content per episode. This is not now, but in the future, this will start happening. I've also enabled a couple of functions for the show, and it's more, I mentioned on a past episode, it's more so that I can be consistent with basic cryptonomics. But you can now, on this is on anchor.fm, so if you're subscribed on Spotify, for example, or iTunes, or any of the other outlets, CastBox, I know we have some folks from there. This is from the anchor.fm side, which means you'll need to go to casualtalkradio.net and scroll down, and then you'll see anchor.fm. That is the host. If you're interested in this function, this is the listener support that I mentioned on the previous episode that has been enabled. What that does, there's two ways to do it. If you just say, you know, I want to kind of toss a little bit, tip into a jar, we have a tip jar function, and the tip jar allows you to do a one-time tip and call it a day, and you can choose in increments of $5, how much you want to tip. If you appreciate the coverage, if you appreciate the show, you can do that. There's also a actual supporter monthly subscription type of function. And by doing that, you can do as low as $1 a month, let's say, but it just shows kind of support to the podcast with no other obligations. The reason I turn those on is because at some point in the future, this will then be replaced, I'm believing April, to an actual subscription and a premium model. What you currently have access to will not change. You'll still have access to the podcasts as they are, but the subscription is going to give you extra perks. It's going to give you more value-add things. I believe that you're going to be very interested and excited when you see what I've got planned for the subscription model. So today, if you want to help support the show, you can do a tip one time of whichever amount in increments of five, or you can do a listener support as a monthly, as low as $1 a month. And that just basically shows appreciation for the show. Those are enabled. You'll need to go to anchor.fm, and then you'll have options to subscribe as a listener and support the show. The next update is, as I mentioned before, we're going to be introducing or reintroducing Substack, not for the podcast, but for any significant or important updates that we believe are worth your time and attention. For example, any changes that we're making or our relocation that I've talked about, any of these important updates we want, we'll mention them on the air, but sometimes it's good to be able to get email updates so you know where things stand. You'll be able to sign up for that on Substack. It's the same Substack that was there before. We're just repurposing it for email updates and kind of blog entries and that sort of thing, as opposed to using it for the podcast. Simply that anchor.fm isn't really good for that purpose. So Substack will be there off to the side, and you'll be able to link to it from casualtalkradio.net. And then internal update for your records. We did get the final pieces. Anybody that's in the United States is aware that we're in tax season right now. And I mentioned about the delays in tax processing. This year was actually pretty smooth. We filed the tax forms, and we had to do a lot of crypto reporting, and the tax went pretty quick. It took about a week. And then we got the confirmation from IRS about the refund, and we just received the refund today. So I'm very happy that they seem like they got back to efficiency. Now, of course, I'm still waiting on at least three different government agencies who owe me in six figures at this point. other than the IRS. So I'm still owed a lot of money. And as a result, I did mention on the previous that I am pretty committed to getting out of Nevada. I think the government has done the governor has done a terrible job in catering to the citizens. He's more catered to the President Biden. I want to be in a place where he or she caters to the citizens, and they want the citizens to have their individual freedoms like we were supposed to have. However that happens, and then I'm hoping that'll be my final place to reside, and I won't have to uproot and move again. That's what I'm gunning for. In November, we expect a blowout, so it's very well possible that Nevada has a total shift and then they get their heads straight. But there's a lot of damage in Nevada. They don't want you to have lawns. They punish you for lawns. They don't want you to have anything that's a freedom, per se. And, of course, from a financial help perspective, they're just totally not trying to do it. So now I've said it's time for me to uproot, go to a different place, and that's in the process. I've actually got the U-boxes coming. I'm going to be loading up stuff that I know I don't need to touch, like right now. And I would call you guys to say that, too. Like, if you have stuff sitting around, maybe you toss it in storage, because I've realized that it's not that I'm a pack rat, but what tends to happen is I've got a lot of things where I may only touch it once a year, and it doesn't need to be in the home. It just needs to have access to it. And if I put it in a U-box, I can just simply toss it there, and I can always go to U-Haul and have them pull the box and then take the stuff or add the stuff or remove the stuff at any time, and then just pay the monthly on the box. If and when I get out of Nevada, then I can have it shipped to wherever I go. I've done it a couple of times. I was hoping not to have to do it again this soon. Of course, it's been 3 years, close to 3 years, but I will have to do it again. So that's en route. That's going to be happening tomorrow. I'll be getting the first of the 2 boxes packed up. That will take care of about 80% of what I have in the home, because I literally don't touch 80% of what's in my home, believe it or not. That will help a lot, because the second box, once I've committed to where I'm going to go, I'll do the second box and do some assistance to pack the second box. I've got helpers coming for the first one. Assistance for the second box, get the rest of my stuff packed up that I know I don't need to have immediate access to. So a lot of my electronics, basically, that I use now, and it's only because I have to do it for the podcast, right? I can do the podcast from anything. Right now, I could record the podcast on my phone if I had to, or my tablet, and then I could send it to a laptop, and I've got 3 of those, and do the post-processing on the laptop, and it'll sound just as good or very close to as if I do it on the microphone. The reason I do it in my current setup is that it's faster. This computer is designed for getting this process done most efficiently, and I have other tools that let me do the upload a lot more quickly. Things like internet will be a little bit of a challenge, but I'm not too concerned on that. I've got that mostly figured out of what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to reinstate one of my mobile plans that I had terminated. I'll have to turn it back on. It'll only be $50. Get that up, and I'll be back and running as I'm moving through the country for having internet access. And then at that point, I'll make sure that I do the updates and the uploads and everything else. Because now that I'm very close to kind of the Midwest, is as far as where I am and where I'm going, the availability of satellite wireless will be a little bit better than it has been. Also, like the carriers that I use, they're more ubiquitous in this place as opposed to on the West Coast. I know it sounds weird, but there are places in, like, say, Southern Oregon, Northern California, Northern Nevada, Western Nevada, that you just have no signal. There, I have a photo on the thumbnails for one of the episodes where I'm standing out looking at a road. That's Western Nevada. There's no signal out there, and there's no sound, believe it or not. You literally, if you stand outside right now, you'll always hear something, right? It's a bird, a plane, a train, an automobile, or some white noise that's in the background. You always hear something when you're in the city. Out there in some of these country areas, there's nothing. There's no sound. And you can hear the pressure against your ears, the pressure of nothingness, because your ears are wanting to hear the sound and they're fighting to try to hear some noise, and you hear nothing. There's no call boxes. I would say when I was out there, no cars passed me at any point. I was the only one out there on the road. Obviously, there are going to be like truckers every now and then, but usually they go overnight. So if I'm going during the day, there's nothing out there. Of course, if you break down, you're kind of screwed until a trucker shows up, or maybe a police officer happens to be coming through, or state patrolman or sheriff or a maintenance worker. You're pretty much screwed. And of course, remember, this is Nevada, so we're talking a desert. There was points right next to Area 51 even that my internet your cell phone coverage completely dies. And of course, I'm pretty sure Area 51 had something to do with it. So I know that there is kind of this mythical belief that we could just go all electric and, you know, we can get rid of 3G. Actually, many have already gotten rid of 3G signals. We can go 5G now because we could just go all mobile. We don't need call boxes. They started yanking those out of California. I feel bad for anybody who gets stranded because we're going to learn a hard lesson. And I say this because I've driven a lot of these drives. I've driven now from Southern California all the way down to Tijuana. And that was a little bit painful. There was stretches where there's nothing there. When you drive from, in this case, San Diego up to Magic Mountain, that was a little bit painful. There were stretches there where there's nothing out there. Driving from Southern California, in this case, Los Angeles, up through to Northern California, up to the border. And there are places through like Avenal, California, nothing out there for stretches at a point. Or if there is a call box, it doesn't work. That's interesting. No lighting. So if it's like freezing fog, which I ran into at parts of Los Angeles, you're just kind of screwed because it's cold and it's dark and it's foggy. And it's a bad mix because the road might be icy and your lights aren't able to penetrate very well. And you could run into the back of somebody very easy because you can't easily see the brake lights like you should because the fog is so thick, especially in the valley areas. There's that. When you get to Northern California now, just before Siskiyou Pass, there's a little small town just before the border. That's where I stayed at a hotel. I think it was the Best Western, and I stayed there for like 4 hours, and she gave me a discount. And I wasn't going to take Siskiyou Pass. And if you've never heard of Siskiyou Pass, Siskiyou Pass is probably one of the more dangerous drives you can take trying to get from Northern California to Oregon and then to Washington. You can either go along the coast or you can take Siskiyou Pass. They both have their share of danger. And the stories are, I never took the coastal road, but the coastal road has the stories that because of the slickness of the roads, mostly, people have kind of gone off the side. Siskiyou Pass is similar in the sense that it tends to snow up there quite a bit. And when the road is really icy, they don't have any, at least not when I drove it, they didn't have any barriers protecting the road. And it's basically a mountain. It's what it is. So you can either consider it Siskiyou. Summit is another name for it. It's basically a mountain. So when you drive up this thing, if you hit there at night, all you look and see with your headlights is a bunch of slush on the ground and a bunch of darkness ahead of you. There's no lighting. There's no nothing here. There's no rest area. There's nothing to keep you safe. So when I looked and I see this, I said, I'm going to pull off, stay at a hotel, and wait for daylight, because if I need to drive with slushy roads, I need to at least see what I'm doing so that I can compensate for when my car decides to oversteer. And at the time, I wasn't as up on game with tires that are designed for winter driving. And most of the time, you know, if you're living in California, Southern California at least, you're not buying winterized tires. You're buying all seasons because that's what you normally are dealing with. You're dealing with rainy weather, hot weather, and that's about it. You might have the occasional little bit of ice, but it's rare, especially in San Diego. So I'm dealing with all seasons on a Nissan Altima, and I'm pretty sure that was a 2013 Altima at the time, or 2011 rather. So I see this. I stay at the hotel. Then I'm fine. Then I hit the road in the morning. I take the pass. It's just as dangerous as people told me because it's a very narrow, winding, curvy road. And then it goes down. Then it's a downgrade. And you're still dealing with slushy road conditions. At least it's light, so I can compensate for it. I can go slow. And then once you get past all that and you're at the very bottom and then it's a straight and then it's fine. But yeah, it's terrifying. And anybody that drives it at night, which I saw nobody else out there, so they probably knew what was the deal. Anytime that you're driving this dude at night, it's one of the more dangerous drives I've taken. And I've taken quite a few drives at this point. Siskiyou Pass was probably one of the more dangerous ones. Not the most, but one of them. And during that whole curvy nonsense, I can't imagine an electric car would have been able to handle it, not only because of the temperature, but just because of the torque that you need when it goes uphill, because that's another thing to consider. If you're coming south through Oregon, you're going to be uphill through Siskiyou. So I can't imagine electric vehicles easily be able to do that, especially when you have slushy conditions. I'll tell you about that in a second. So I get to Oregon, and then it's flat road, but Oregon is high winds. It was really high winds. My car is literally blowing left to right. I can feel it moving as I'm driving. And I'm passing all these fields, just fields, fields of gold, Sting. And that's when I get into the whole speed limit. I think I covered that on a previous episode, but I didn't realize how the speed limits were working out there. I don't even recall if I stopped for gas at that time. I don't think I did. I think I might have just knocked it through and got to Washington and then gassed up in Washington because the Altima had really good mileage. But the Siskiyou Pass was a really dangerous drive. And then once you get to Washington, it's a bunch of bridges, and they're very old bridges. They're metal bridges. Like, they look like they used to be railroad bridges that you're driving through in some cases or across in other cases. And they just look rickety and old and out of maintenance, and you look you're terrified just looking at these things. So there's that. In Washington now, I get to the place where I'm going. It's called Bothell. And in Bothell, it's a nice-looking place. It's pretty laid back. It's suburbia, number one. Okay, I get in there, and I had rented this sight unseen, and I talked a story about the whole dryer and having to run the heater on the way to work because the dryer wasn't working. They had a blizzard, a very bad blizzard one of these times, and I'm up in that place, and again, I got all seasons. Now, I had realized, okay, I need to get some winter tires, so I ordered some through TireRack.com, which I've used on a couple of occasions, been very happy with. Got these winterized tires. They're like the best of the best at the time. I've used them a couple of times. But they arrived too late. So now there was one time it's just snowing, and there's snow on the ground. And I'm coming back from work because they forced everybody to go into work, even though it's a blizzard and even though it's dangerous and even though they have risks and all these things happen on the freeway. I come back from work. This unit, this townhome, is sitting at the top of a hill. It's a very steep hill. And there's a bunch of, you know, ice and slush and everything on the road. There's a whole bunch, like literally 7, 8, 9 cars that are off on the side, not wrecked, but they're not able to move. They're not able to do. And you can tell they slid down the hill because they couldn't make it. And there's one, it's a rear wheel drive. I think it was a Beamer, BMW. And it was struggling to get up the hill because it's rear wheel drive and it can't keep straight. I'm at this point now, I'm pretty sure I had the Fusion by this point, but I had changed cars. So I think I had Aston Martin at this point, which was a Ford Fusion. And of course, this is a hybrid. So it's not fully electric. It's got gas and electric when it needs to. And my Fusion was able to make it up that hill, but it wasn't easy. I had to really gun it because it was hard to get the engine to turn over because it wanted to stay in electric mode and you can't force it to go to gas. But it was able to take that hill and get me home. Now I'm terrified to take it back down the hill because I know there's no way I'm going to be able to retain grip coming down the hill in this hybrid electric vehicle. It's just not going to happen. That was terrifying. And that's in a local suburban thing. I was really concerned about slipping down this hill and ramming straight into the house that was at the bottom because it was a curve when you get to the near bottom and you would have ran right into these rickety houses. And I was not trying to do that. And so I wasn't able to get any food, really. So we were working from home. They finally allowed us to work from home a couple of days. Power went out. And our manager, right, he said, okay, I'm going to try to make it into work. And then he gave an update over email, said, I'm not going to make it. It's way too cold. I couldn't get any food, so I'm kind of stuck. And I think I did Amazon Fresh, and they were able to get it done a couple of times. That saved me. That was a terrifying situation. Then when I got the opportunity over in Colorado, now I have to take the drive and take from Washington, Western Washington, and drive through and get over to Colorado. And there's a whole different story on that that I won't bore you with. But suffice it to say, when I eventually did do this drive, first of all, I had taken the plane out there and I did Uber and everything else to just kind of get the lay of the land, get used to the work, get all settled, start getting checks, and then go back, get the car. That's part of the other story I'm not going to tell here. But I had to walk back to the apartment. We're only talking like a couple of miles. It wasn't like a crazy amount of miles. There's a bus. The problem with the bus is it could take you an hour and a half to go this 4 or 5 miles, which is a joke. So I figured I would walk it. That was a big mistake. It was, again, ice, slush on the ground. I don't mind walking in ice. I don't mind slush. I didn't mind it was cold. Just the frustration of having to do it because my car wasn't with me at the time. So I do this a couple times and then eventually I'm like, okay, this ain't going to work. And I start doing Uber and then that worked out a little bit better. I wasn't going to take the bus and train. And I did that a couple times. It wasn't going to work either. it just, the snow and ice wasn't going to work. You basically had to have a car in order to get around effectively when there's inclement weather in this place. So then I decided to go back and get my car. I get my car and now I got to do the drive. There's an accident. I'm not going to bore you with the specifics on this, but that caused one of my headlights to be broken. So now I'm driving with one headlight and I'm having to drive from Western Washington. And the way the freeway goes, you drive towards the east, towards the Tri-Cities, and then it curves south, I believe, partly through Idaho, I believe, and then back up through Wyoming and then down straight into Colorado. And I'm pretty sure that's where it was. I'm pretty sure that that was the drive that I did and not the one that I did Utah. I'm pretty sure that's the key. I had to look at the map to know for sure. Regardless, Wyoming. Wyoming is absolutely terrifying when it's dark and it's snowy, icy, slush, cold. It is absolutely terrifying to do that drive if you don't have lighting. And again, I only have one headlight, so that doesn't help matters because I can't really see. And the freezing fog is here. The only thing that really saved me there is they have these, it's kind of like a factory type thing. And it has lighting in the distance where you can see a bunch of stuff around you just because of the ambient lighting of this factory type thing. Most terrifying thing I can think of at the time. So this is Western Washington through Eastern Washington, then down through Idaho, through Utah, and then back up through Wyoming and then down to Colorado. I know it's a stupid path, but that's the way I had to do it. And then going back, I'm pretty sure that was through Utah and then up through Idaho and then over to Oregon. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. So Utah was terrifying. There's a part in Utah now. This is on the way to Oregon when I left Colorado. There's a part in Utah. There's a city called Snowville, Utah. And it lived up to the name because when you go through this place at the time, now what I'm understood is that normally it's actually very nice and it actually is green, everything else. But when I went through here, there was nothing but snow. That's all you saw. You didn't see any houses. There was no gas stations, nothing. A bunch of mountains and, of course, a bunch of snow all over the place. That was terrifying only because you don't know if you're going to be able to get gas or not. So, again, I go back to this conversation about electric vehicles and we're going to go all electric and everything's going to work. And yet we can't even manage to keep our stuff all set and taken care of because we're so busy trying to, you know, get gas stations all over the place. We haven't even got that problem solved because I'm telling you right now that Snowville had no gas stations when I drove through it. Absolutely none. There was nothing, nothing. You could look and see nothing. Find it on a map. You'll see it's a tiny town of nothing. And if you were ever going out there, there's nothing all the way around except a little bit of farms. You can go inland a little bit and you might find a thing, but it was extremely difficult to find. This was consistent throughout Utah, the northern part of Utah, that you weren't going to be able to find the gas stations that you need. So now I'm in a hybrid electric, so I'm reasonably okay with extended drives and not worrying about gas. I'm saying that that's because I had a hybrid electric. I got some battery that helps me. When you're doing the downhill on the mountains, the regenerative braking kind of takes care of you a little bit and buys you some time. So you're not burning a lot of gas. If you're in a straight electric, you might be able to pull that off, but most of those have a range of like 200 miles. I'm pretty sure I went about 300 miles between gas stations when I was driving through northern Utah. That means that you have to adjust your drive and adjust how you do it and why you do it and where you go just because they're trying to rush away from gas vehicles. And of course, gas prices are out of control, so we know why they're doing it. But had they not shut down the Keystone Pipeline, it might not even been an issue today. And that would have bought us some time. Right now, everybody should be really driving a hybrid. We shouldn't be rushing to electric because our grid isn't ready for it in the United States. We're not ready for it. We have not prioritized it. And so now we're trying to rush it and they're going to do it wrong. And there's going to be a lot of issues. How do I know that? I worked for a company that did the investigation and the inspections for gas pumps. And their whole business is to make sure the gas pump's safe. One of the reasons that Oregon and New Jersey were so adamant about allowing you to pump your own gas was at some point in the past, there was a danger. You could have the gas pumps literally blow up. That hasn't been such a risk in a long time, but the inspection is still a real thing. And so when we saw how long it took to get to safer gas pumps, it took a long time. We're not going to have that same safety up front with the electric, you know, charging stations. And that's assuming we can get them out there. It's going to take a long time. And there's a lot of infrastructure. And I think what they're assuming is they'll just cover all the major cities, which is how they're dealing with phones, that basically your cell phone will work in any major city or any major metro, and we'll just deal with it. And very rarely would you be needing to do this across city or across state lines. I can tell you from personal experience, and this goes back to the other part of the story, once I got to Oregon and I realized, okay, you know, this isn't going to work here, brother. And okay, I got to get over into something else. And I decided to go to Nevada. Oregon, the drive. Now, first of all, Google Nav told me wrong as far as which way I went. From Oregon, from the southern Oregon, go down 139. And then you connect through Canby to 299. And then 299, you curve from Cedarville to 81. 81 takes you across to Nevada, and then Nevada, it's 447, and then you can take 447 far south. The problem with Nevada is you aren't on a major freeway at this point. You're still on basically this minor by road until you get to 80. And then from 80, you got to do a bunch of connects, and then you get to 50. And then from 50, you do a bunch of connects, you get to Carson City, and then you go to 395. 395 takes you, then connects over rather to 208, and then 208 takes you to 338. Like, it's all these connects going along the border of Nevada. And this is just to get down to the 15 freeway from the north. And then once you hit 15, you're pretty much golden. But it's a brutal path, a lot of connections to get to where you're trying to do. So from Oregon, you're going south this, and then there's a bunch of mountains and not real roads that it navigates you through. Very dangerous roads that aren't really roads. Like, they're planned to be roads, or they used to be roads, but Google Nav tells you to go this way. And this is all because I was trying to save hours. I could have gone straight down 5 from Oregon, gone down to, say, Redding, and then down to Sacramento, and then cut over to Nevada from there. But that would have added hours to the trip, and I'm trying to save time. Plus, I was not trying to deal with inclement weather, and I knew that once I got to Nevada, the weather was going to be pretty clear, and it was. It was just kind of brutal in the way that the freeways were laid out. A lot of those towns out there aren't really towns. You could probably walk from one side to the other of the town in like 10 minutes. That's how tiny they are. Many of them didn't have gas stations. So I'm, again, grateful that I got my hybrid electric. But if anybody just had an electric vehicle, I don't see that they're going to make this drive from Nevada, anywhere north of Nevada, down to Las Vegas. And you're saying, well, just, you know, ship your car and then fly it. Yeah, but shipping your car is very expensive, number one. Number two, and a lot of senators talked about this, you know, right now flying is a very sketchy thing. You know, you're asked to, first of all, you get into the airport, you're asked to have something stuck on your mouth and you can't half breathe. Then you're asked to be patted down and groped through TSA. You're waiting in long lines. Then you get back there, you're overcharged for water, you're overcharged for food. Then you got to show your stuff again before you get on the plane. Then you're crammed onto the plane like a bunch of sardines, unless you buy first class, which isn't really first class. Then you can't half breathe on the plane because of the pressure, and you're still forced to wear this thing on your face because of the pandemic. Then you're waiting on slow people to debark and everything. It's not fun. And so, yes, I do these drives because for me, I need the freedom and control of the time, freedom and control of the experience. And I don't want to be crammed into something. Even if it takes longer, I would rather do that. In a perfect world, I'd be able to take the train there because there used to be trains that scattered across the map. In some cases, I can, like Oregon to California, or from, in this case, what I'm talking about now is Maricopa to Texas or those. There are still train routes, but Nevada, by and large, doesn't have any. Oregon has some, and that's great. Washington has some, and that's great. California has a lot. And then the East Coast has a lot. So I said, well, since I like the train and the train works for me, brother, I figured, let me go ahead and get out of the West because it's clear that the trains don't support the West Coast like they used to. I'll just go to where the trains are, and then I'll have what I want. Because I don't know if you looked at train tickets, but train tickets are under $100 if you want the regular seats. You can often get the room for just a couple hundred bucks frequently you can get rooms for cheaper than a plane ticket. And the room is a room. You're dedicated in space. It's not a major big thing, but you are dedicated. You have your own space and food. You can get food to your room. But also there's no TSA. You're not patted down. You're not groped. You're not harassed. There's not a lot of crowds. There are in certain of the East, like where the train is really busy and that's their main commuting. I'm not talking subway. I'm talking the train, Amtrak. There are some, but generally speaking, it's a much more relaxed experience. Yes, it often takes a little bit longer, but I just did a measurement of Maricopa to Houston as an example, and it was about 16 hours. Driving, that's about 14 hours. That's not bad. And it just depends on the state. It depends on which state you're going to and which state you're coming from and what's in the middle. Like in California, you got a lot of mountains, you got a lot of cities, you got a lot of stuff getting in the way. In Oregon, it looks like they're navigating around forests mostly, and then a couple of mountains and a couple of towns. So as they're navigating and twisting and turning through all these cities, that slows down the train. Like Oregon to California, for example, that's like a day and a half of a train trip. And yes, if I were to drive it, it's probably about 10 hours, so that's faster, but then you got to deal with Siskiyou Pass. And I wasn't going to do that. Whereas I could just take the train. The downside is, of course, you don't have any wireless internet. Whereas on the East, they seem to have more consistent internet access, and that was a consideration. In summary, the reason I'm talking all this through to you is that I don't relish having to do a move. I don't relish having to uproot again because it's not fun. I never like doing it. The truth is I can't get any company to sign a deal, or if they're wanting to sign a deal, they're asking terms that I find unreasonable. And so I'm going to go East instead of going West to try to find opportunities so that I can restart the business. Or if I don't do the old business that I did, I'll just go full on with the podcast. Right now, the podcast is kind of a side gig that I do. And I try to do my regular job because, of course, I don't want my skills to go to waste. At the same time, there are certain terms I'm not going to be acceptable with, and I have to look out for myself and my own best interest. Because at the end of the day, we have to feel like safe in our own purposes. We have to feel like we have control of our situation. Once we start losing control, I think we kind of lose the plot. And so I've made the conscious decision that, yes, I'm going to actively work to get out of Nevada. I don't know exactly where I'm going to go yet, but I'm working on that. I've got a call tomorrow with one of the states, and hopefully based on what he tells me, I might go there. That is a state I'm familiar with. I've actually lived there before. I don't really care for it, but I don't mind because I know that the state is very much about liberty and freedom. And the nice part about this one particularly is that we may actually even have property that we own out there. So I'm going to look at that one, see what they're talking about, and see if it makes sense for me and for the business, more so for the business. Like, I want to be a small business that supports and is able to hire people and develop and contribute back to society and at some point make a difference. But at the same time, there are going to be certain things I'm not going to be okay with from a personal liberty perspective. I'm not going to accept certain terms. And so that's currently what I'm tussling with. And if you hear anything in my voice of frustration, it's because I know that a lot of what's happening, it shouldn't be allowed. It shouldn't be reasonable. And it's only because of who we have in the White House right now. So that's what's going on in my life right at the moment is getting this move solved. I'm pretty much committed, mentally committed, that I'm going to be out of Nevada. I haven't decided where I'm going to go because I want to get a commitment from one of these different calls that I'm doing that says, yes, we're going to take care of you. Yes, we're going to set you up. Yes, you're good to go. Yes, we got a place for you. Da, da, da. And then I'll do the commit and do the move and get out of here finally. Or I'll hear back from any of these government entities that owe me a lot of money that'll tell me, hey, we're ready to pay you. And if they're ready to pay me, then at least it buys me some time. I would still leave Nevada. It's just that it would make it easier to leave Nevada. Right now, I'm kind of doing it on my own merits, and I don't want to do it on my own merits. I want to do it in comfort and style. So the next thing on the list here is with this whole business of, like I said, my small business, and I want to hire and contribute. It occurred to me that a lot of these companies simply don't support that same mantra. They don't want to contribute back. It's still all about them. And I understand why. It's because they have to answer to shareholders or customers, et cetera. But I think that there's room as a business to try to meet workers halfway and take care of the workers and treat them like they are of value to your company. By which I mean, I've seen people and I talk to people as part of what I do, where they look for opportunities and there's job postings all over the place. but it's almost like the vast majority of them are either fake or they don't know how to screen. When I was hiring, and I hired two people, when I was hiring, I put a job posting out there and it was straight up. I said, what is the problem I need you to solve? In some cases, that's sales. In some cases, that's marketing. I didn't talk about tools. I talked about problems because that's what I need. I need somebody who can do these things. If you think you can do it, call me and let's talk it. I actually had a couple of people come back and say, well, I don't understand what you're asking for. It was very straightforward, very simple, but people have been so conditioned to expect tools. And then they assume, okay, either I have the tools or I don't. If you think about it though, the problem is that the tools, most people are going to lie. They're going to say, oh, yep, I can figure out the tools. I can figure out tools because it's easy, right, to figure out tools. That's why I'm not a fan of the job description focusing on tools, because tools can be learned. Anybody can learn a tool. It's not the right answer. But that's what we've always done because that's how college teaches you to do it in HR management, is it's tools. What tools do you need to do? I'll give you an example of what I talked about. Assisting in formulating proposals in conjunction with team members in various functional groups. A proposal. You're going to help us create a proposal. Don't worry about the tool we do to use it. Don't worry about the medium, and don't worry about the physical place. Assisting in developing a budget and price estimate. This is for a sales position, or in this case, a sales position. So this salesperson needs to help me understand, how can we price our service so that it gets people to buy, and then we can always adjust it later. Assisting in developing project plans, defining roles and responsibilities and the scope of work for the projects with input from sponsors, leaders, investigators, and functional groups. There, I'm telling you that as we create a project, as we find a customer and we need to build a project, the salesperson needs to be involved to make sure that everybody knows what they're supposed to do, because we want the customer to be happy, and I think the sales rep needs to stay engaged. Drafting narratives, tying project components together. What you're saying there is there are different things the customer wants or we believe that they should do. We have to be able to tie it all into a big picture so that we can define the value. If we can't define the value, how are we going to be able to justify that we were successful or not? It's called definition of done. This salesperson should be the person that does that, because they should understand the problems that we're going in at. Packaging and assisting in presenting the proposal. This is simple. A salesperson's job is to write up the proposal that goes to the salesperson so that they can decide whether we're worth the time or not. Evaluating and, where feasible, developing new marketing sample materials. Sometimes a sales rep has great ideas about how we can market our product. And so I wanted the sales rep to have input into the marketing material, because they got to present this in front of the customer with a straight face, not me. Providing feedback regarding web presence and related traffic data to identify patterns that may warrant change in strategy. This is pretty straightforward. If the salesperson is not getting any hits, if the salesperson is talking to people and the people are saying, yeah, I had an issue trying to find your website, or I went on your website, I couldn't find this information, or I tried to fill out the form, you told me I couldn't find it. That's a UX problem. It means our interface and our experience is not conducive to closing deals. So I want the salesperson, or wanted the salesperson, to contribute to say, hey, the customers are giving us feedback that there's a problem with the website navigation or finding information, or maybe it's down, I can't hit the website. They should be channeling that to say, because it affects them, it affects their numbers. Participating in activities needed to support the management functions of the team. This is generic on purpose. Ultimately, what we're saying is, I can't manage you unless you tell me what it is that I need in order to support you effectively. What do I mean there? If you as a salesperson tell me that you want to go boots on the ground, go door to door, that's fine. We need to talk about it. What's your plan? Do you have a location you want to go? What are you targeting, certain businesses? Let's work together. And then once we figure it all out, I'll build that as a deliverable. Because right now it wasn't one, but maybe you decide it should be one. I'm empowering the sales rep to say, we need to adjust strategy. Management, I need you to approve us changing our gears. Because at some point, this person's going to be more than just the one person. It's going to be multiple people. They're all going to be subject to this, whatever we decide. So I want them to have input into that, so it's not a one-sided me dictating to them. Minimum qualifications. Ability to influence and persuade to achieve desired outcomes. Every sales rep needs to be able to do that. Strong analytical problem solving and negotiation. Every sales rep needs this. Excellent oral written communication. Every sales rep needs this. Willingness to travel less than 5% expected. Every sales rep is likely to use that. Excellent organizational planning and prioritization skills. If you're going to be kind of managing or overseeing the project, you've got to have these skills because you're not just a cold caller. You are the point in contact for the customer. That means that they're going to expect things of you, and they're going to expect that you got your act together. Excellent interpersonal skills. Every sales rep needs that. Experience with budgeting processes. The sales rep has to be able to explain to the customer why the money we're asking them to spend makes sense. That goes to budgeting. Sometimes the customer says, you know, I'm running low in this area here. I don't have the budget to be able to pay you. We have to figure out how to make the numbers work so that we can close the deal and we look good to them. If we're able to save them $50,000 in the first year, maybe that has a bigger impact than we think, especially during the pandemic. Nothing in here is confusing, though. If you were listening to what I just said, nothing of that is anything confusing. We're talking basic things that a salesperson would need to be able to do. And I literally have people come back and say, I don't know what you need here. That's because we've conditioned people into tools. Well, we need somebody who knows React.js. We need somebody who knows Python. Somebody who knows, you know, Excel and SQL Server and Access, or we need somebody who knows SAP, or we need somebody who knows this. And the tool doesn't tell you anything. One, because any tool can be learned. It doesn't matter if you have it yet. It can be learned. And we should embrace that you can learn it. I've talked to many companies that won't let that go. For them, nope, we want 10 years of this upfront, period, because that's what we need. And they don't really need it. Because I've worked for many companies myself where I didn't have the tool up front, but I was able to learn it so fast that it didn't matter. I was able to still do the work. And in cases where we're open, where we can change the tool because we see it's not the right fit, I might bring in skills around other tools that are actually better for the problem. It's always around the problem. This is how my messaging is different than everybody else. I come in looking for how can I solve the problem, not with what tools. Tools are, they change all the time. We see this now. If you were to go through college programs around all these different tools, by the time you get out of college 4 years or 6 years later, they've already changed and companies have already moved off to different tools. This goes back to what Mike Rowe has said, which is that we're basically lending money to people that we don't have for them to go to college to learn about jobs that we no longer exist because the tools keep changing. And so the tool focus is exactly why I started to get frustrated in 2020 when the pandemic hit, because a lot of companies are still fixated on tools, not problems. I can solve any problem that a company may have. However, because they're looking for tools and they're not willing to let somebody learn the tool just to figure it out and listen to the messaging that tells them this, they're less willing to engage. Then they'll find somebody else who comes and says they got the tools. That person's not able to really solve the problem. So then they're wasting time and money spinning up solutions in these tools. And then they go back out to bid again because it didn't really solve the problem. That's where my job, my primary job comes into play, is trying to help them understand why what you did in the past doesn't work. This extends to the hiring process. I've always advocated, stop talking about tools. It doesn't serve you any good. When you look at the screening process, I can look at when I hired, I can look at the resume and within seconds know whether a person is even a close fit for the role. If I see that they're a close fit, I'm going to call them and I'm going to ask them some basic questions. It's just a regular phone call. I know that the phone, there's a lot of people that are against having phone calls. I've actually seen people say, I don't like talking on the phone. That's a problem to me because the phone is the best way that we can just talk it out. It's the most efficient way, not text messages, not even email, because it's a two-way conversation. I'm going to be asking questions. I don't want you to have the time to think about my answers, because if you were able to sufficiently prepare, that means you're overly prepared for the review. And I don't want you to be overly prepared because I want to test how you're able to deal with these one-off situations. If you're in the workplace, that's a normal thing. That you're hit with random, you don't know what you're going to be hit with. You don't know what somebody's going to ask you, somebody's going to say to you. So that's part of the test. On a regular phone call, can you keep up? Second, if that sounds good on the surface and everything's all cool and you're okay with the terms and we're okay with the rate and everything else, then I did a video interview. The video interview is more formality. It's so that you can put a face to the name. You know, I'm legit. I know you're legit. And we do a little bit more. I do a deep dive now into some of the background. And this is the test that the background is real and legitimate. If everything's good there, I'm ready to extend you an offer. I see companies now, and they're doing what they do first is that you send a resume because they'll post it on some site. And after you send the resume, they'll tell you to go to some site, usually it's Workday or iSIMS or something else, and fill out their ATS for them. And you're spending 30 minutes filling out the ATS with the same information that's already on your resume. And then after this, you don't even get a call back. You don't get an email back. You don't get an acknowledgement. Or you send the resume, they'll contact you back. They'll say, well, you're not exactly in our city, so we're not even going to interview you, even though it's a remote role. Or let's say that you've been open to relocation. They still won't talk to you because they want you to be in the actual state in order to interview you, which is a joke. They do everything in their power not to actually interview you. And they refuse to just read the resume. Just take the time to read it and at least high-level understand if this person's a partial or close fit. And by close fit, I don't mean the tools they know. I mean the problems they solved. We've learned over time that the resume should tell the story about the problems you solved in the past, less about the tools. Now we're shifting back to the narrative about tools, and that's why these businesses are having a hard time, because they're still fixated on tools, even though the tools keep changing, and they keep spinning up new tools, and people in college that just graduated, now there's new tools they wouldn't have known because they never worked for a company that had them. So my business tries to decouple this narrative that you have to be a perfect person on the tools or a perfect candidate or perfect applicant, and just simply say, these people are perfectly fine. You can train them. You can mentor them, pair them with somebody there, and let them ramp up on the job. And just start them at a lower salary if you must, because now you don't have to worry about perfect and spend $150,000 on somebody. This person over here might be willing to work for you for $75,000 and work their way up to the $150,000. That allows for loyalty. It allows them to grow and develop. You know why many companies don't want to do that anymore? Is because they're afraid that they'll take those skills and go to another company. Here's the problem. If you always go for perfect, that person knows that they've got you by the nads, as it were. They know that they can hook you. They know that they're more likely to leave than the ones that you can build loyalty with. So I try to actively get companies to let go and actually give people a chance, get back to the fundamentals of just look at the resume. If they're a close fit, don't worry about perfect, close fit in the problems they solved. Do a single interview, phone interview, just screen them, make sure that's the right fit, make sure the salary is good. Ideally, embrace remote work. So if they're not there, you can at least get them started. Talk about relocation at some later point if the person's okay with it, just not upfront. Negotiate with them, meet them halfway. Then maybe they're not flawless, but you still move them to the next step. And that next step should be where you dig into the nuts and bolts. Identify more about what problems they solved and how they would solve your business problems. Don't worry about tools. It doesn't matter. You have problems. How would they solve those? Then extend an offer if everything makes sense. And ideally, it's going to be the first person that comes along that meets everything you're trying to do. That's the person that you proceed that with. Then you'll get the rebuttal, or I get the rebuttal, that says, well, yeah, but we could just wait a little bit longer and it's going to be somebody that's more perfect. You can do that. But in my mind, you lose the ability to complain that you can't find the workers you need, because it's not true. You've purposely blocked those people out because you rejected them for fickle reasons, instead of embracing what we used to embrace, which is people that have the potential, people that we can train, people that we can mentor and develop. Because ideally, we should want everybody to be able to get back to work. I know it's kind of a shocker, but today, we still have not gotten everybody back to work off the pandemic. We've been busy firing people for not sticking something in their arm. We've been busy closing down small businesses, which has lost jobs. We've been busy forcing delivery services, third-party delivery services, and gig work services, which has lost a lot of full-time employed delivery people their jobs. We've fired people in the hospitals. We've fired people from the police departments. We've fired people from the security. We've fired people all over the place. Many of these people aren't back to work yet. We're still in a situation where people are struggling to get back to work. And it's all because the businesses are now trying to go back as if we're not in a pandemic, forcing people back in an office. Even though COVID's still a thing, they're now just forcing back because nobody's telling them, no, we still need to be safe about this. And you should be embracing remote work when the work doesn't require you being in an office. We're still forcing stuff for travel. We're still forcing people to fly all over the country. We're trying to force back to that old, as I predicted that we would do. And it's the wrong answer. As a result of seeing this, what I knew was going to be the trend, of businesses that resist what we needed to do, which is to adapt to a new normal and actually get back to being employee friendly instead of trying to focus on what the CEOs want, it made me decide maybe I'm just not going to be able to help them because they don't really want the help. And that's why I closed the business in Nevada. I didn't close the business entirely, but I closed it as far as Nevada goes because it wasn't worth trying to fight that battle. No matter what I tried to do, I was not going to be able to win that war. So I made the conscious decision to simply just close the Nevada form of the business. And then I did the podcast work and it's off to the side. The podcast is a sole proprietorship. It doesn't require any registration. Then at some point later, I'll relocate where I want me and the business and everything I'm doing to a state where it's more in line with what I want, where the state is trying to force these employers to actually embrace remote, to realize COVID's still a thing, to actually take care of people, but allow individual liberties and freedom like we used to have before there was ever a pandemic, but also introduce the remote work back into it. The benefits of not having commute, the benefits of not harming the atmosphere, the benefits of not having excessive traffic, the benefits of not having the accidents. We should be pushing towards that, and instead we're running away from it. And instead we're prioritizing electric vehicles, which is just going to put more people on the road. And there's still going to be problems with the climate because of the way the batteries are made. We're not solving the problem. We're actually making it worse. I didn't want to contribute to any of that. And the reason I told you all that, number one, is to explain what my business does and the motivation behind why I felt it was the right time to get out of Nevada, because Nevada is everything I don't want for my small business, everything I don't want as an individual. They are anti-individual. They are anti-small business. So it's important for me to move to a state that more supports the small business than the individual. And if anybody's out there in the United States and you heard what I just said and you know that in your state, they are friendly to small business, they're going to support small businesses' growth, they're supporting individuals, they don't want people to be homeless, they don't want people to be unemployed, they don't want people to go hungry, they actually work to take care of people, but they also don't put hoops in front of all this aid either that take months and months to get, and they actively are trying to grow. They're trying to develop. I know some cities and states like in Wyoming and Montana and others, they're trying to entice people to come to these places because they're trying to grow. And as long as it makes sense for the small business owners and the individuals, that's where I want to go. If you have those suggestions, casualtalkradio.net, fill out the comments form and let us know. And I'm happy to take a look at it because I'm right in the decision process right now. And it is a frustrating thing because I shouldn't really have to do that. The entire United States of America should be small business friendly. They should all be employee friendly. They should all be individual friendly, and they're not. We now have to choose and think harder about the states that we want to give our business and give our persons to so that we can at some point retire without having to worry about something being stuck in my arm or being forced to do a thing or being forced to quit or being forced to move or being forced to live here or being forced to fill out paper. We should be able to get back to the liberty that we once had. And that's all I'm advocating for. And that's what I want for any employees. If I can get the business back up to a point of profitability, that's what I want there, is to be able to hire people and train them and develop them and let them get freedoms. Because that's what I think the spirit of America was designed to be. And I think we lost sight of that. That's all I got for you here on this episode. A couple of points. I do have two guests scheduled for recording next week. Their recordings are going to happen after the regular episodes. So those episodes are going to be normal me. And then the following week, you'll have those two. One will be likely on Monday. One will likely be on Wednesday. And this is all in the mix of me trying to get the move and everything done. But I already have confirmations from two more guests. I think they're very good guests. They're very exciting guests to listen to. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I screened all the remaining guests. The vast majority of them were not a fit except these two. However, I get inquiries probably once a week about new people that want to be on the show. So we'll see how that goes. And then, like I said, if you are interested in sharing any feedback about your state and you think your state might be friendly to small businesses, podcast owners like myself, or technical businesses, or just individuals, any kind of thing where you think your state's just killing it. And I don't mean killing the people. I mean killing it as in doing good things for the people that are there and for the businesses, and they don't bow down to big business, and they seem like they want you to be free and kind of live your life and be left alone. Let us know. CasualTalkRadio.net, fill out the form for comments and feedback and let us know. We read all of those and we would appreciate if you do have that feedback. And again, if you are interested in any sort of being a supporter or tip, however, if you're interested in doing it, that's also at casualtalkradio.net. Click on anchor.fm. And there are options there to do that if you choose. I believe I have the direct link as well to both of those directly off casualtalkradio.net by now. If you're interested, as I said on the previous, I'm not going to press it. I will mention it on each episode for those that may be interested. I want to thank you for listening to today's episode. I will check in with you next week. I will have some more hopefully exciting news by then, because I'm optimistic, crossing fingers, that tomorrow's call will result in very good news for my core business, but also my podcast, because I do want to develop this out and do a lot more and get the word out to more people, because I do think we have an exciting messaging and we're working hard to increase and grow the podcast by leaps and bounds. Basic Cryptonomics is growing very steadily now, especially now. So now it's time to focus on Gentleman's World and get it to the same level of success. And I'll do that with the coverage I do and the stories I tell and the guests that I have on the show. Take care, and I'll check in with you next week.